Greetings from Hidden River Congregation. Come visit us as you have the chance. Thank you, Gary, for the illustration in your devotional there. I don't know if David wasn't aware that he could just ask Google to know where to look for the worms. There's plenty of YouTube videos where he could have watched the good ideas where to look for worms. The message titled tonight is Real Relationships in a Media-Driven Culture. And what David did there when he could not find those worms was exactly what we need to do when we run into problems. Because if we take the suggestions like I just shared, we're not going to have real relationships. I think God, I don't know if he has a sense of humor or maybe it's just his love, but as I studied this message, I was very convicted for myself. And I think God does that to us sometimes. He gives us subjects that he knows we need. This message title is loaded. It talks about a media-driven culture. What do you think of when something's driven? You think of a racehorse out there, and the driver that's driving the horse, he has the reins, right? So he can pull him this way or this way and make the horse go whichever way he wants to go. He takes the whip and whips the horse to make it go faster. Then he pulls back on the reins to make it slow down. That horse is controlled. He's driven. I was looking for a better picture, and I think this is too gray for you all to see it, but this is a man that's bent over on the street because he's driven by his addiction to drugs. He probably started out with small ones, I mean, like the weaker ones that don't affect you too much. He probably got a really nice high off of it. And that craving, it drove him as he continued dealing with harder and harder and harder drugs, trying to get that, see that high, whatever you want to call it, that wears off with time. Just like when you do something really fun, and then if you do it 100 more times, it's not as fun anymore. You lose that high. And that's what happens when they do drugs. And eventually you just do harder and harder drugs until you're sitting there on the street laying out unconscious or a zombie walking around. And next thing you know, they die from an overdose. It's very sad, but they're driven by their addiction to drugs. Media-driven culture is the idea of a culture that's driven by, controlled by the media. And nowadays they have this term called influencers. And they purposely go on to social media or whatever media they have, and they try to influence you to buy something, to do whatever. Then you have the marketers that are constantly trying to get us to buy their products. And we're bombarded with this media that's trying to drive us, trying to control us. I hope you're not affected by that. I hope you are driven by the Holy Spirit in your life. That's the one who's guiding you and driving you. I hope that's your experience. But if you're like me, that comes too close to us sometimes. Supposedly, in October 2025, there's 348 million people in the U.S., almost 350. There was 417 million cellular mobile connections in the U.S., which is about 120% of the population. Now, that's obviously more than the 348 million, but that's because a lot of people have multiple devices, and there'd be a lot of children, I guess, that wouldn't have one yet. 324 million use the internet, so that's about 93% of the population here in the U.S. is using the internet. YouTube claimed 254 million users, which was about 73% of the population of the U.S. So you see the control. Facebook has 71.4%, of adults that are older than 18. 71.4% of those adults are using Facebook. Now the younger ones, younger than that, probably that's grandma's social media app. But I was surprised there's still that many that are currently using Facebook. TikTok seems to be the current rage, 55.7% of adults 18 and older are using TikTok. So it's just a little glimpse into TikTok's one of those I don't have it. I just understand it's a bunch of short videos, and it's just like that drug addict. It's just bang, 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 bang with that dopamine, and you can hardly stop scrolling. And it drives us, those kind of things. And our culture is driven by this media. We could talk about the news media. We could talk about a lot of different things. What drives our culture? But we were not supposed to be influenced by the culture, right? We were supposed to be driven by the Holy Spirit. Now, this word relationships, the root word in relationship is to relate, right? It is how we relate to someone or something, the way that we connect and interact. Could be a relationship with a person. We could be relating to an object. Maybe your relationship with your phone is stronger than your relationship with other people. It's very possible. It takes more than one person or thing to have a relationship. It takes two. When we're talking about real relationships, what does it take to make a relationship real? Not fake, not artificial, but just genuine and real. Now, I'm told that real gold, we know that gold's valuable, right? I don't know if it's the most valuable or not. There's probably some that's more valuable than that. Supposedly, the ounces that we use, it's $4,587 per ounce. So if you take a cup and fill it with 8 ounces of water, that would be worth about $36,700. Just in that amount that you could hold in your hand. 8 ounces. Well, it would be smaller because gold weighs a lot more than water. But just to compare that. So you have real gold that has a lot of value. It's real. And then you have fool's gold that has no value. How do you tell what's real and what's not? How do you tell what's real and what's a fool? You compare the two, right? So I'm told they take a hammer and they try to chisel away at the gold, and if it breaks up into brittle pieces, then it's fool's gold. If it's real gold, it's malleable and it dents and it stays together. I'm told they can scrape something with it and see what color it leaves behind. So to test whether it's real or not, you put it under duress, under hardship, and see whether it lasts, see how it reacts. And that's the way relationships are. When they're put onto the test, that's when you find out whether they're real or not. Real relationships. If you grow up with artificial relationships, how will you ever know what a real relationship is? What do you have to compare it to? As I pondered this subject, this question, I really wondered if my generation is the last one that really knows what it's like to not have all these gadgets and all these ways to connect with people. If you want to go somewhere, you pull out the map and you read the map. Later on, you would get on your computer and print out the directions, and you would have to follow the directions. See, we turn here and we turn here. It was good for our brains. It developed our brains. How will a generation that grows up with the easy connections know what real relationships are? And I had to think, you know what? We parents are the connection. And I wonder how often our connection goes missing. How well do we pass on to the next generation what a real relationships are? Yeah, I'm old enough. I don't think I'm old, but I'm old enough to know when the first cell phones came to be. They didn't have Google Maps. They for sure didn't have TikTok. I remember back when circle letters were about the only social media that there was. You had to wait till it came around and everybody was in it. And hopefully you didn't keep it too long. But I wonder if we parents aren't failing to teach our children what real relationships are because we are losing them too. Because we're susceptible to that. It's not just our children. It's not just the youth. I think it's us parents too that we're losing it. I know it's convicting for me. Youth, Sit down and talk to your grandparents. Not on the phone. Not on WhatsApp, Signal, none of that. Sit down and talk to them for real. And ask them what it was like before phones. Ask them how much time you should spend on your phone in one day. Get their opinion on some of that. It'd be really good for you. How'd you make out before we had all these messaging apps and all these pointless apps? What was it like? Turn to 1 John 4. Real relationships have love for others. I want to talk a little bit about how to define what a real relationship is. And the first one is love for others. And while you're looking at that, I just want to check my email real quick, if you don't mind. I got a big computer up here. It makes me look smart, intelligent. Just check it real quick. And that's not working for me. There we go. You know what? There's my news app. What's Trump been up to lately? Now, here's a story. In Oklahoma, two brothers were playing video games. 19-year-old became enraged over the game and got mad at his 25-year-old brother and simply stabbed him to death. Here's another story. Oh no, just a second. I'll catch up with him later. Perry County, PA, right here in our state. 11-year-old boy was celebrating his 11th birthday. They had a good day celebrating his birthday, and the boy was playing his video game in the evening. Sometime before midnight, the father took the game from the boy. He sang happy birthday one last time. Several hours later, the boy was looking for his video game. Found the key for the gun safe, got the gun, and shot his father. He told the officers that they had a good day together, but he got mad when his father told him he needed to go to bed. Now here's another story. In India, three sisters died after jumping from the 9th floor of their apartment building in India. According to local authorities and their family, the girls were suspected to have become addicted to an online game and were recently denied access to a phone, the news network reported. They left behind an 8-page note for their parents. In the note, they detailed their love for online gaming and what appeared to be a fixation on Korean culture. I wonder if there's a connection to gaming, some of this violence. Well, this research study says that there is no connection with violent video games and violent behavior. They're not associated. There seems to be no. Here's another study that says that those playing violent video games became more aggressive afterwards or desensitized to real violence. I mean, the military uses games to train their soldiers how to kill, but if youngsters are doing the same game, that doesn't make them more likely to kill, I guess. That doesn't seem likely. What about social media, I wonder? Maybe we could look at what that connection is. Social media addiction and mental health. The growing concern for youth well-being, Stanford Law School. I read a little bit here to you. Mental health problems have become a major public health issue in the United States, affecting a significant portion of the population. According to the National Institute of Mental Health, nearly 1 in 5 U.S. adults is living with a mental illness. And the prevalence of mental health problems among youth is even more alarming. The widespread use of social networking sites has been identified as a contributing factor to the growing mental health crisis, especially among younger generations. The link between social media and mental health issues has been well documented in numerous studies and research papers. A systematic review found that the use of social networking sites is associated with an increased risk of depression, anxiety, and psychological distress. Students who reported frequent social media use were more likely to be bullied at school and electronically bullied compared with less frequent social media users. Frequent social media users also were more likely to report persistent feelings of sadness or hopelessness. Frequent social media use was associated with having seriously considered attempting suicide and having made a suicide plan. It's interesting reading. Back here to 1 John 4. Actually, if you just bear with me a little bit, I just remembered I almost forgot to order that filter that I need to buy for my furnace. If I can just check my status real quick, just bear with me a second. Oh wow, they're doing something fun again. My family is so boring. My family is so boring. These people are always having fun. They have the best families, the best life. Oh, he got a new truck. I wonder what trucks are selling for. I can go over here to my auto app and see what they're selling for. Oh, there's my auction group. I should see what's getting sold. Oh, YouTube. We can watch that for the next, I don't know, you have till midnight? We're talking about love. When somebody does that to you, do you feel loved? When somebody, you're having a conversation and somebody pulls out their gadget, whatever it is, and that gadget gets between you and them, I don't know about you, but I do not feel loved. And what we need to do is we need to take those things and we need to get rid of them. If we're going to show love for our brothers and sisters, for our families, for our friends, they have to stay out or we're not going to have a real relationship. 1 John 4, starting in at verse 16. And we have known and believed the love that God hath to us. God is love, and he that dwelleth in love dwelleth in God, and God in him. Herein is our love made perfect, that we may have boldness in the day of judgment, because as he is, so are we in this world. There is no fear in love. And one of the biggest problems with media is the fear of missing out. I like information. I like reading. I like learning. And if I don't check the news every day, something could happen that I don't even know happened. If you're not part of that WhatsApp group, I don't know, whatever group you all youth have, if you're not part of that group, you're going to miss out. There's going to be other people having these relationships, and you're going to miss out. And that fear of missing out is what drives us to have all these things, all these apps, all this messaging, all this fake stuff is what it is. The fear. There is no fear in love. When our love is grounded in our love for God, we find our identity in him. We do not find our identity in how many people looked at our status, how many people liked that post that we made. Our identity is not in those things. And our fear of missing out goes away. There is no fear in love, but perfect love casteth out fear. Because fear hath torment. And we know that many people know what that torment is. Because so many people get addicted to that social media use and that constant need for the likes and the approval and the interaction. And they're tormented when they don't get it. He that feareth is not made perfect in love. We love him because he first loved us. If a man say, I love God, and hateth his brother, he is a liar. We could say, if a man say, I love God, but doesn't have a real relationship with those around him, doesn't have time and love for those around him, he is a liar. For he that loveth not his brother whom he hath seen, how can he love God whom he hath not seen? And this commandment have we from him, that he who loveth God loveth his brother also. Love is the oil that's in a real relationship. And it's a love for others is what I assume you know what I'm talking about. Because media use, especially excessive media use, is the exact opposite of love for others. It's a love for myself. It's what can I get? How can I feed my addiction is what it is. Real relationships are going to be with people they have close proximity to. And I say this, I know we have family. I have a brother that lives in Washington State. We haven't been out there to visit him in a couple years. We want to. So you have those relationships. You try to keep them active to a degree. But you are not going to have a real close relationship with somebody that lives farther away. It's the people that are close to you, the people you go to church with. Those are the ones you're going to have real relationships with. Family, church family, friends groups, people you do things with, maybe your work friends. And I think if we try too hard to maintain too many relationships of people outside our circles, of people that are further away, I think we lose the real relationships of the people that are right around us. As we're trying to maintain those relationships at the kitchen table, of those people that are out there, we're losing the relationships of the people that are sitting right there beside us. It's the way it works. Close proximity. We're told different times in the Bible to salute the brethren. That means to embrace, to enfold in one's arms. It's a nearness, a closeness, a relationship, a real relationship where we're here together. Real relationships require listening. Recently at Pilgrim Bible School, they were having a class on courtship, and boys and girls are supposed to come up with 5 things that they would desire in a husband or wife. And the girls, there was only one that said, a man who listens to her. Only one. There was a lot of other good ones. And I had to think, if it was a group of 40-year-olds, wives, I think a man who listens to her would be much higher on the list. I think it would be. Because we realize how important listening is to relationships. Song of Solomon 2:14-16. Let me see thy countenance. It's the desire for closeness. Let me hear thy voice, for sweet is thy voice. This is a married couple. They're desiring to be together, desiring to hear each other. And thy countenance is comely. Take us the foxes, the little foxes that spoil the vines, for our vines have tender grapes. My beloved is mine and I am his. See that close relationship, that real relationship, and yet they realize that there's little foxes that are apt to destroy those tender things, those things that are so easy to lose. And listening is one of those things that's so easy to lose in a relationship. We're around each other all the time. We kind of start zoning out, and we forget to listen. A phone call is a weak substitute for a face-to-face conversation. And a quick message is even a weaker substitute. Put down your phone, get it away from the table. Give the other person your full attention. And I said, this is a subject that I struggle with. In our home, I'm one of the first ones to have my phone out at the table. Real relationships have pain. Now, you didn't want to hear that. Real relationships have pain. Proverbs 27:17 says, iron sharpeneth iron, so a man sharpeneth the countenance of his friend. If you back up a couple more verses in the same chapter, verses 5 and 6, he says, open rebuke is better than secret love. Faithful are the wounds of a friend, but the kisses of an enemy are deceitful. A friend that's willing to tell you the truth to your face is way more valuable than 1,000 people on whatever media app you have telling you you're such a wonderful person. Because one's real and one's fake. When we're in close proximity with each other, as like I talked about earlier, we're faced with each other's faults. The bad manners, the bad personalities, whatever we have that's less than ideal, we all have them. None of us are perfect. I know I'm not. I know you're not. And the closer we are together, the more we're faced with those things. And guess what we learn? We learn grace. We learn forgiveness. We learn love. We learn to overlook those things and appreciate the valuable. And it's something that we will never learn in a fake relationship. Real relationships have separations. Your best friend moves away. Maybe they go to the mission field. You're determined to stay in touch. And by saying stay in touch, we know that's not literal when they're that far away, unless we go visit or vice versa. But it has the idea of just having a little connection. But we're determined to keep a little bit. And some of those are very important to keep a little bit. But real relationships have separations, and you know that relationship will never be the same. It's reality. Then we have the pain of death. You view the body in the casket one final time. You lower that casket into the grave. You shovel the soil on top. Eventually you plant the grass, put the headstone there. You grieve, you mourn, and you move on. You heal. That's the way relationships are. They have death. And when we're faced with that pain and that death, we're forced to face reality. We're forced to face the reality that unless the Lord returns and takes us all home with him to meet him in the air, we too are going to be one of those people lowered into that grave. Am I ready to meet the Lord? Are my children ready to meet the Lord? And we're faced with the seriousness of life when we're faced with the pain of separation in real relationships. What am I doing for the ones who I still have? These are the things we ask ourselves when we're faced with separations in real relationships. I want to talk a little bit about artificial, superficial relationships, whatever you want to put in there, fake relationships, the opposite of real, right? First of all, we have self-love, the addiction, the craving to get what I want. It's a self-focus on myself. It's the opposite. We'll get more into that later. We ignore the close relationships because they're too messy. It's a lot easier to have that relationship on your phone with somebody an hour away when you don't have to deal with their obnoxious behaviors, like your brother or something. Because those people on that phone don't have those obnoxious behaviors. They're perfect people. Everything you see in their lives is just the model. Real relationships are too messy. Or so we tend to think. Real relationships are so boring because you can go on your phone and you can pick out, 100 people, 300 people, 1,000, however many contacts you have. And whoever's not boring at the moment, we're going to connect with them now. Might have the You might have a picture of the family sitting at the restaurant. Dad and mom, however many children around the table. And they're all sitting there on their phones, just looking at their phones, not having real relationships. I've been guilty of that. Youth coming back from Bible school on the bus. They're together. They're surrounded with youth. but they're on their phones messaging somebody else. Or maybe they're messaging somebody in the other seat. Why? Real relationships are too boring. They take too much work. I prefer just to lazily scroll along to find something exciting to look at, get my dopamine hit. Artificial relationships have very little pain. Social media friends have no clue if I have terrible table manners. They won't tell me. They don't know if I don't show up at church services or if I show up late for work. I don't have to tell them that. They won't know. They don't know if I have an anger problem or if I'm depressed. They won't know that. I'll just post a real cheery picture and I'll show, you know, all these people here, we're having a good time. And then I put the phone back down and I'm grumpy and angry again. You only have to be good for a little bit. You only have to be cheerful for a little bit. These artificial relationships are easy, right? It's very little pain. An employer who uses text or email to fire an employee is a pathetic employer. They're not strong enough to face the pain. And as we get into more of these artificial relationships, we don't know how to do real life, and it affects serious things like that. Artificial relationships have artificial separation as well. Nancy left the chat. I wonder why. Huh, that's a funny joke. And you forget about Nancy, right? It's that quick. George hasn't posted anything for a while. I wonder what he's up with him, and then you forget about him. Oh, Henry's mother died. I'll just put a quick praying emoji on there and forget about him. It's so cheap. Artificial relationships have artificial separations. For the rest of the time here, I just want a couple things that I've pondered as I was pondering this subject. And the first one is time. I don't know if any of you are 20, but if you're 20 today, and let's say that God gives you enough years to live to 80, so you got 60 more years to live. I don't know if you track your screen time or not, but you better would be. And I'll tell you why. If you spend 5 hours of screen time per day, till the day you turn 80, you will have spent 12 and a half years staring at your phone. If you spend 2.5 hours on your phone every day, you're going to spend 6.25 years staring at your phone. It's sobering. It woke me up when I stopped and did the math on this. It was good for me. I know I don't have 60 more years. Well, perhaps, but very unlikely. I happen to know that there's some youth that spend 10 hours a day on their phone. I guess they're going to spend 25 years looking at their phone. I don't know. Something's going to have to give. Something's going to have to break. It's not going to work. What's God going to say on Judgment Day? You spent 12 years looking at your phone. How are you going to answer God for that? How? What would God want you to do with those 12 years? Imagine what you can do in 12 years. You could spend 2 years on the mission field and still have 10 left. You could spend a whole year witnessing for Christ and still have 9 years left. You could spend a whole year visiting with real people, going out for breakfast with real brothers, and you still have 8 years left. I was just kind of dumbfounded at the time I could have if I've cut back on the time I spent on my phone. It's sobering. We ask, what should we do with our time? What does God want us to do with our time? And I think we can just ask, what did Jesus do with his time? Who better than Jesus had the ability to be an influencer and go out there and influence 10 million people at one time? Jesus is omnipresent, all-powerful. He could do that. Well, what did he do? Not original with me, but I heard he had a 3-mile-per-hour ministry. We're not used to going that slow, but supposedly that's the average speed that the average person walks. As Jesus walked and he talked to the people that were right there beside him and the people that came out to hear him, that was his ministry. That's what Jesus did. If you want to know what God wants us to do, there's your clue. I think we need to keep the phones away from the table and minister to our family members. And that's something I'm going to try to do better at. I think we should leave the phone behind during meetings, or at least keep it in our pocket. Stop checking the messages. Some of us are businessmen. We have employees that depend on us. So we struggle with that. It's not always possible to leave the phone behind. Stop being selfish. That's what it really is. All that phone time for myself when there's other real people around me and I'm avoiding real relationships, it's selfishness. It's what it is. I want to ask you, when you go to the store and they have the option of self-checkout, how are you planning to witness for Christ to the self-checkout kiosk? How are you planning to do that? See, our relationships are getting less and less and less, and our chances to witness for Jesus are getting less. When I go to Sheetz, I go up to the counter and I talk to a human being and I show them the joy of the Lord. Once in a while, if the line's too long, or if nobody's behind there because they want you to use the self-checkout. I remember the days, and there's still some of these. Up there in Pine Grove, we had a local auction house, and twice a year they had big auctions. And you would go there, and there'd be other people there, and you would stand around and visit. It might have been a waste of time, I don't know. You buy stuff you don't need. But you're building relationships with community. Nowadays, it's all online. They don't have them anymore. So you get on your computer and you buy your stuff that way. There is no chance to witness of Jesus Christ on an online auction, is there? I guess you'd be honest, but they don't know who you are. I think we should go shopping more. Unless you're actively witnessing to the Amazon driver, you're limiting your chances to witness for Christ. I know, we have our limits. We're busy sometimes and don't have time to go out. Sometimes stores don't have what we need. Sometimes we have to get that filter off of Amazon because Lowe's and Home Depot doesn't have it. We should send real cards, not this just as little e-cards, little emojis. Send real cards. What if he would send real flowers instead of just a picture of flowers? Or better yet, what if he would take those flowers and show up at the door and have a half-hour visit? It's getting better and better and better. As I was studying for this sermon, I came across a discussion group where the question was, what did youth do before they had phones? And several of them started answering. I guess they were older ones. They remember what it was like back then, before they had internet, before they had all that. They started talking about all the stuff they did. They were creative. They were building. They were designing, drawing, doing things with friends. And these younger generations are like, that sounds like fun. That's what I want to do. See, the younger generation had a glimpse into real relationships with real people. And they said, that's something we want. I think we need to purposely spend more time building relationships and witnessing, reaching souls for Christ. I want to talk a little bit about our brains. Run into this word amusement. Amusement parks, Maybe don't even go there anymore. They just have all your amusement right here on your phone, right? The basic word of amusement is amuse, right? The basic word of amuse is the word muse. Amuse means to think. I don't know if anybody uses that word anymore, but if you're musing on something, you're pondering, you're thinking. The letter A in front of muse means not or no. So amuse means to not think. Amusement means not thinking. You're being fed something and you're not thinking. That's what amusement is. There's no need to think. You're just sitting there, you're scrolling. The only thing you have to think is about is whether to skip that video and go to the next one. That one might be more interesting. Your brain just dulls. And as you're not thinking, you're getting filled with that media and it's filling your brain. As you're not thinking, as your mind is especially vulnerable spiritually to that influence. Remember, the media-driven culture is out there and it wants to drive you. And as you're not thinking, that's the perfect time to influence you. How much are you thinking? We lose our imagination. We lose our problem solving because we're not thinking. Google Maps says turn right in 300 feet. You don't have to look for the road sign anymore. You can't get lost. You miss your road, rerouting. You don't even need to think. Problem solving is gone. Like that boy that had to couldn't find the worms, and he finally resorted to praying to God. He was problem solving with the greatest problem solver that there ever was. But we don't need that anymore today. We have Google, we have YouTube, and everything else that we find your answers on. Brains of children and youth who spend too much time looking at a screen will fail to develop properly. When we had young children, we had those toys you get with all the electronics, and they back up, and they go beep, 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 and make all the noises, and you lose your child's imagination. I took them out. They could have the toy without all that stuff. They could provide the beep, beep, beep. They know what a vehicle sounds like. They can make it go vroom. The imagination is necessary for their development. And of course, young children should not have their own phones. I think sometimes anymore the landlines are a thing of the past. We can have a cell phone that's strictly calling and texting, and they can learn their phone skills of calling grandma. They can connect with grandma just like you did in the old days with the phone on the wall. It's okay. But a child and a young youth, I feel, should not have their own phones. It's just, you're hurting their brain development is what you're doing. That's my opinion anyway. I think we need to limit our youth's access to social media. Set limits. And by the way, youth, maybe you should pull out the decrees for to keep and read what that has to say about it. But enough to the youth. Parents, you are totally responsible. You are the ones that need to step up to the plate and swing the bat and run the bases. I want to talk a little bit about addiction. We already mentioned that a couple times, and I'm going to read you a quote. This is a little lengthy, but bear with me. Social media addiction refers to an uncontrollable, unhealthy dependence on apps such as Instagram, X, Facebook, TikTok, YouTube, and Snapchat. You probably know what they are. People who become addicted to social media experience an intense urge and compulsion to share content and scroll the apps, which takes up an increasing amount of their time and energy. Even though social media is allegedly social, relational, right? That's what it's called. Even though social media is allegedly social, many who suffer from addiction develop antisocial tendencies and mental health problems that interfere with healthy social skills. So it works the exact opposite, which is what fake things do, right? Satan's working against the real. This is his work. Social media platforms are designed to create a cycle of chemical releases in users' brains. This is where the addiction comes in, just like the druggie, that make them want to spend more time on the platform. Feedback on social media, such as likes and reposts, activates the brain's reward center by releasing dopamine, a chemical linked to pleasurable activities like social interaction. These platforms are designed to addict users to the feeling of short, repetitive bursts of dopamine. Now I want to break it up here a little bit. The reason we find real relationships boring is because we have gotten addicted, just like that druggie. We've gotten addicted to those bursts of dopamine, one after the other, to where the real things in life are boring. Research suggests that social media use literally rewires the brain, and that social media companies such as Meta, that would be Facebook, Instagram, now WhatsApp, have used this to keep users hooked and coming back for more. This deliberate addiction technique is one of the reasons. Now, it wasn't that many years ago when the cigarette companies were allowed to post glowing pictures of young people just hanging out, smoking their cigarettes, as cool as they could be. And they fought the science left and right that it was dangerous to your health. And I wonder if that's where we are today with some of this stuff. And people are just waking up to some of this. Someday they might wake up to that too. I don't know. Maybe it'll be too late. AI will have taken over and we'll just be totally dumb. The deliberate addiction technique is one of the reasons for the increase in social media addiction lawsuits in recent years. Social media users who have experienced serious health problems or lost family members to suicide have begun to fight back and hold social media companies accountable for the harm inflicted by their algorithms. These algorithms are the computer's way of figuring out what you are attracted to and just feeding you more of what you want. And it's so strong that it's hard to break away. I don't have most of this stuff out there, but the little bit I have, I know what it's like. Once you start scrolling, it's hard to stop because there's something else to learn. You know, right at the bottom of your screen where you can't see what's coming up next, you know, when you're scrolling, there's something down here that you want to learn yet that you haven't seen yet. And you keep scrolling, you keep seeing more and more and more. And you don't remember anything up here, but that craving for more and more and more. And they design these apps to do that to you. It's purposely addictive. They designed it to addict you to their technology because they want you to use it. Because the more you're on it, the more they can sell their ads, the more money they're making. Oh, they sell your personal information too. They're not just selling you ads. They're getting your information and selling it to these advertisers. The days where you could talk about something and an ad for that wouldn't pop up. You remember those days? I have a couple symptoms here of addiction to your phone. These are not original with me. Feeling unsettled when your access is limited. So you let your phone behind, or you forget your phone, or whatever. Something doesn't feel right. You're missing something, right? A part of you is not there. Ever had that feeling? Checking it first thing in the morning and last thing at night. Feeling stress when the smartphone isn't at hand. Using social media while walking and driving. Feeling bad when not getting likes or views. You posted something and nobody's liking it. If you're feeling bad, that's a sign of addiction. Preferring to communicate through social media rather than face to face. Now, this was a long time ago. This was back in the days, probably cell phones, but I remember there was a comic, and Grandpa and Grandma and grandson and his wife were visiting Grandpa and Grandma. And the ladies were out in the kitchen and the men were in the living room. And the grandson gets a text that the meal's ready. And Grandpa's like, "She's right over there. Why didn't she just come tell you?" Preferring to communicate through social media rather than face-to-face. It's the youth on the bus communicating through their phones instead of talking. Feeling the need to share everyday things all the time. Now, I heard there's an app out there. I thought it was a new one, but I guess it's not that new. It's called Be Real. And from my research, every once in a while, I heard it's popular with Pilgrim Youth. That's why I'm bringing it up. Once a day, you have 2 minutes to post a real picture. And it takes a picture of what's in front of you, and it takes a picture of you. It's called Be Real. You're not putting the filters on. It's just the real you. Feeling the need to share everyday things all the time is a sign of addiction. Thinking that everyone else's life is better than ours. Checking in wherever we go. During church. Every time you use the restroom. When I walk to the mailbox. It's almost like that druggie. You're just walking along looking at your phone, you know. Like, come on. I'm preaching to myself. Wake up. Are you addicted? Am I addicted? What are we going to do about it? It's a question we need to ask ourselves. We might need to get help. Our brains are short-circuited by the blurbs, by the multitasking. We think we're good at multitasking. Something I came across recently, I was pondering this message and it stuck with me. I'm not endorsing being ultra-successful, wealthy, whatever you want to call it. But they said that the ultra-successful, the ultra-wealthy people are not on their phones all the time keeping up with everything. They pay other people to do that for them. They pay other people to give their social media image. They pay other people to watch the reactions on social media. They themselves are not doing it. And that frees up their own brain, their own imagination, their own creativity, and that makes them the successful people they are. If you want to be successful, you're going to have to put the phone down. Wake up to the real world. Come out of your stupor. Build real relationships. Because our brains are short-circuited by the blurbs, the multitasking that we think we can do. The brain pleasure hit of likes. It's just like drugs that push quality relationships away. There's people taking drugs because they're trying to forget the pain in their lives. And they have that moment of euphoria where they're just lifted up out of their reality. And social media does the same thing for us. It lifts us up out of our present, boring, real life around boring people. It's just like drugs. It makes our problems a lot worse. It makes our pain a lot worse. It's very easy to see in somebody else that's addicted, but it's very hard to see in my own life. We'll talk a little bit about artificial appearances, the pretend world. Now, you probably know that there's a lot of these videos where these people pretend to just meet somebody on the street and have this off-the-cuff conversation or this prank or whatever it is, and it looks funny. I don't know what the percentage of those are staged. In other words, planned, designed. They're not real. They're not the genuine that it looks. There might be real people doing it, of course, just like actors in a movie. But now we have AI. And now we got to figure out if even that's real. Maybe even the people weren't real. The whole thing is just fake. It's pretend. So much of it is. What about the filters? Some of you older ones have no clue what I'm talking about, probably. But I take a selfie of myself, and I don't quite like the way I look. So I can go on my photo app, and I can pick out a filter that makes me look a little bit more perfect. Or a girl might put funny glasses on, or lip gloss, or... Why? We had this conversation at our house recently, and I asked my daughters if they know why our churches don't allow makeup. And it hit me. I've never preached a message on that. I don't know if I ever heard a message on that. And I wonder, these filters that we use on our phones, are they any different? What's wrong with makeup anyway? Because it is a person that is not satisfied, content with the way that God created them. They're trying to make a more perfect image of themselves. It's not even real. And what I fear is happening is we've left these filters come in, is we're losing our convictions against the makeup. And the makeup's creeping into our churches. It is. And I wonder if it's not the filters that are influencing some of that. We have allowed the world to influence us to paint our faces in pursuit of perfection. Media-driven culture. What's driving us? Satan says God didn't make you pretty enough. Did Satan ever tell you that? You need to add this stuff to your face to make yourself look more pretty, because God didn't make you good enough. The other thing that really bothers me that we're seeing more and more of is the disappearing messages. I think the youth have swallowed this wholesale. Maybe I'm late to the party in talking about this, but back in 2011, there's an app came out called Snapchat. And they didn't necessarily invent the disappearing message, but they were the first ones to really make it common. And that app quickly got the reputation as a cheater's app. And if a spouse knew that their partner had Snapchat, they lost some trust in their partner. Why do you want an app that makes all your messages disappear right away? And now we have youth that send these pictures. You can only view them once. The parents can't see it. The youth can't take it and say, you know what, this is a problem. I don't know. The accountability is just gone. The temptation to post stuff that should never be posted becomes ever more real because they only see it once and it's gone. The evidence is not there. We have it on WhatsApp. It encourages foolishness and it encourages depravity. That's what it encourages. Here's a quote. Trusting, this was about Snapchat, by the way. This was somebody's quote that just came across. Trusting someone is one thing. Trusting someone blindly is another. You youth want your parents to trust you, but do you really expect your parents to blindly trust you? If you can't show them what you're doing and have an open heart and an open phone, what are you hiding? I think we're losing something with that one. I think we parents need to wake up. That's what I think we need to do. We don't expect youth to have all the wisdom that comes with experience. But the parents are the missing link. I don't know if you're still in 1 John or not, but I want to take you to 2 John to wrap up this sermon. Second John, verse 12. John's writing a letter. He could not be there in person, so he had to write a letter. It was his second best. Having many things to write unto you, I would not write with paper and ink. But I trust to come unto you and speak face to face, that our joy may be full. John knew what a real relationship was. He knew that just putting everything out in the letter was not sufficient. He knew that it needed to also be face to face. Are we losing our face to face? Are we? I went back up to verse 7. For many deceivers are entered into the world. Now, this was John talking back then. Do you think John had any clue? Okay, we have a lot more deceivers today than we ever did before. But there's a much bigger problem. The deceivers have more access to our brains than they ever did before. We are more likely to be driven by the media that's around us than what any generation ever has before. The deception is tremendous. And when we turn our brains off with the amusement and we stop thinking, and that deception pours in and we start losing our convictions, they're gone, our principles. We don't even have time to think about principles. We're just thinking about who's going to message me next. Or looking to see who all reacted to my message. Or why he didn't reply yet. Why didn't he even read it yet? He got it. Come on. Our lives are crazy. For many deceivers are entered into the world who confess not that Jesus Christ is come in the flesh. They're not living according to godly principles. They're not living by the Bible. And our media just opens us up to that worldly influence like we've never had before. And it's right in our pockets, right in our faces, right in our bedrooms. This is a deceiver and an antichrist. Look to yourselves that we lose not those things which we have wrought. What are we losing tonight? Parents, what have you worked for? Is the next generation losing it? Look to yourselves that we lose not those things which we have wrought, but that we receive a full reward. And as we look forward to the end of life, as we look forward to the judgment day, and we ponder how much time we spent on our phone, what's your full reward for that? What's your full reward going to be for that? What's my full reward going to be for that? Whosoever transgresseth and abideth not in the doctrine of Christ hath not God. He that abideth in the doctrine of Christ, he hath both the Father and the Son. And tonight, tomorrow, and next year, we are not going to abide in the doctrine of Christ if we can't get our friends or get our minds out of our media-driven culture. We're somehow going to have to break free. That's my burden tonight. Let's come to the Lord in a word of prayer.